Hello and welcome to Speaking Spirit, where we talk about all things spiritual. Your host, John Moore, is a shamanic practitioner and spiritual teacher. And now, here's John.
Hello, hello, hello. Hello, my friends, I'm back. And I'll say that I am recording this at an unusual time for me. I'm a morning person, and I usually do these things first thing in the morning. But I wanted to get one out, and it's almost 7 o'clock at night where I am, past my bedtime. Just kidding. I'm not that much of an early bird, but today I'm going to talk to you about spiritual self-defense and protection. What does that mean? Why do we care? Why should we be interested? What are some methods of protecting oneself spiritually? Excuse me. And what on earth, or not on earth, do you want to protect yourself from? I have, I'll say this. My background's a little strange. So I have a background as a shamanic healer and teacher. I teach shamanism quite a bit, teach other spiritual topics. And I taught a course in shamanic self-defense. It went over really well. It was very popular with people. And I get a heck of a lot of people who contact me and go, how do I get rid of these entities that are attacking me, or I'm under a curse, or what have you. So I want to talk a little bit about that today. And so my background, not only as a shamanic healer, but I also taught martial arts for a couple of decades, including teaching self-defense classes at places like Harvard Medical School and a primate research laboratory, interesting place, and law firm. And I would do these private self-defense classes, and a shelter for pregnant teens. So all kinds of places. I taught self-defense, and then I went and I got a master's degree in information security and assurance. And so I learned a lot about things like hacking and protecting boundaries. And so combining my physical self-defense, my technical self-defense or company defense knowledge with my spiritual knowledge sort of puts me in a unique spot. And so I have a ton of books about, I have a shelf of books basically on spiritual self-defense. There's a lot of stuff that comes from witches or witchcraft or Wicca or, you know, whatever. There's a ton of stuff that comes from there, right? I have a book called The Witch's Shield by Christopher Penzack, an author I really like, who is a witch. And I have a book in front of me as we speak called Hex Twisting, Counter Magic Spells for the Initiated Witch. I have not read that, but I've read parts of it. Interesting stuff, and I always like doing research and getting new techniques. So let's talk a little bit about what I mean by spiritual self-defense and protection, or spiritual hygiene is another term I like to use for this. And to get into this, I want to talk a little bit about the Emerald Tablet. The Emerald Tablet of Hermes Trismegistus, thrice great Hermes, the Atlantean, 12,000 years ago. This guy carved out seven rubrics, so little paragraphs, into a green stone and hid it away in Egypt. And the story was that it was eventually discovered by Alexander the Great, who built a temple around it, or a library around it, and has been lost since then, but there are copies of this. We have copies of it in Arabic, in Latin, and now, of course, in English. It's been translated many times over. And it lays out the in very succinct terms some of the secrets of the universe, secrets of reality, right? If you know how to read it, if you know, you know, if you understand the laws, if you dive into them. But the first one, the first law, or kind of, I guess it's maybe the second rubric. The first rubric just says, hey, this is all true, I swear. But anyway, the famous line, and you might have heard this before, has sometimes been translated as above, so below. Or also translated as that which is above is like that which is below. And what this can be taken to mean is that the physical world is a reflection of the spiritual world, and that the spiritual world acts as a template for the physical world, and physical manifestation is a process of the divinity, the one mind, the one thing coming down through all of these layers of creation and finally winding up in physical reality. And so we can be assured that things that exist in the physical world also have a spiritual counterpart, and that includes things like threats, things like bad guys who want to do harm to us, things like, you know, disease. There's a spiritual component to disease, things like that, right? And so we want to be protected from those things. Now, I will say this. When somebody contacts me regarding I've been cursed, or I have entities after me, or what have you, I don't just take them on face value. And it's not to disbelieve what they're experiencing. I believe that people who contact me are having real experiences, but very frequently they are misinterpreting what happens. And I will get into that a little bit. Most people these days are not under curses. Most people don't have possessing beings, but it can happen. And there are other things that can happen that are problematic spiritually that can affect us on the physical plane. Runs of bad luck can often be attributed to spiritual causes. So what I want to do is outline a little bit of the way that I look at spiritual threats. What's a threat? What's a vulnerability? This comes from my background in risk analysis. A threat is something that can cause harm, can cause some conceivable harm, right? So if you're an insurance company and somebody builds their house in a flood zone, they would have to take out maybe a separate flood policy, because a flood is a type of threat to the structure, right? As a human being, there are all kinds of threats to your life. There are diseases, there are accidents, there's old age, there's, you know, that sort of thing. So these are things that can cause physical harm to you. Crime, traffic accidents, falling down in the shower, accidents in the kitchen. These are things that can cause physical harm. And so spiritual threats include things like curses, baneful magic, energy attacks, just picking up bad energy from the area you're in, crossing nature spirits, doing something that you shouldn't do, violating the sanctity of a temple or a space, all kinds of things. Breaking oaths is a big one. Don't make oaths to spirits that you don't fully 100% intend to keep. So, excuse me. That's what a threat is. So a vulnerability means an exposure to a threat. So if I don't ever fly, I will probably not die in a plane crash. That being said, planes are safer than cars, safer than bikes, accident wise, fatality wise. So that's when we get into risk, looking at risk, right? So we have threats, we have vulnerability. Vulnerability are, you know, weaknesses, or is one way to look at it, or exposure to threats. All right. If I am where I live in the state of Maine in the US, I am highly unlikely to be bitten by a poisonous snake, because there aren't any that live here. That isn't to say somebody might not have a pet cobra in their house that they shouldn't have, but you know, very little vulnerability to that. So vulnerability can be contextual as well. So let's talk about risk. Risk is a combination of the chances of something that is a threat, the chances of that occurring, and the amount of damage that it can cause. So sort of a multiplication. And there are, you know, there are risk tables that insurance companies use and risk analysis and that sort of thing, right? So, for example, getting bitten by a poisonous snake would cause a significant amount of damage, or could cause a significant amount of damage to me, including fatality. However, the chances of that happening where I live are very, very close to zero. The chance of dying in a car accident anywhere in the United States are fairly high. Okay, so that fatality could be considered like 100% loss, and the chances are pretty high. So should I be more scared of poisonous snakes? Not scared, but, you know, not unintelligently fearful, but should I be more cautious of poisonous snakes or driving in my car? And the logical answer to that is driving in my car, right? So people think that, you know, spiritually we can do a little bit of risk analysis. And this can be hard, because if you're not some kind of practitioner, you don't know a lot of people in esoteric circles, that sort of thing, you might not know how common things are, right? So very powerful curses that can cause huge amounts of damage are very rare, extremely rare. But energy attacks that can make you physically sick, even when the sender is not conscious about it, are much more common and can cause physical illness. So when you look at that, you're like, oh, well, I should protect myself energetically. Not very many people get possessed, and most people who think they're possessed are suffering from some form of mental illness. I will talk a little bit about that. I will talk a little bit about, you know, I have some experience dealing with people who contact me who have a diagnosed mental illness, and this isn't to say they aren't deserving of help or they aren't experiencing exactly what they think they're experiencing, you know, things that we consider delusions and hallucinations. My take on that is that they are experiencing spiritual phenomena. They're completely open and they can't filter things out, and their brains perceive this as a threat. Like they're constantly under threat. And I really feel for people who have, you know, sort of paranoid schizophrenia. You know, I've had people contact me like, I'm under attack. I've been under attack my whole life. Gods and goddesses are attacking me. And I come from a long line of witches, and I'm, been cursed by 13 generations of, and so, you know, when I hear that stuff, people contact me, I'll say, have you ever been diagnosed with a mental health condition? And invariably they'll say, oh, yes, you know, schizophrenia or schizoaffective disorder or something along those lines. And I've gone off my medication because I don't like the side effects. And that is a really unfortunate aspect to our medical-based mental health system, is that frequently the medications that we use have really bad side effects. And so people decide to go off of their meds frequently and wind up sometimes in a worse position. You know, and I feel for those people, but, you know, my position is I won't, if somebody has a diagnosed condition of any kind, mental, physical, whatever, I won't work with them if they're not seeing their doctor and they're not doing their treatment, they've gone off their meds. I am, you know, probably not going to make things better, and there's a risk I could make things worse. Even though I fully believe in shamanic healing, I think it is a good adjunct to Western medicine. And I don't want to ever do anything irresponsible or harmful to anyone. So, you know, I've sent a few people away and say, you know, if I would be happy to see you, but I need a note from your doctor saying that they, you know, or therapist saying that they don't think I'm going to do you harm, and that you are actively seeking treatment and going, you know, and participating in your treatment. And people rarely come back to me, and I think that's unfortunate. Okay, so many people contact me who think they're being attacked by entities nonstop or whatever, aren't, but some people are. And how do we determine that? Well, we use lots of spiritual means to determine that. It's very difficult to determine that without, you know, using physical means alone. And probably not possible. I don't know how to, I wouldn't know how to do it. So I'll give you an example from my own life and talk about, you know, some things that happened. So years ago, I was in a relationship with somebody who is a practitioner of not just shamanism, but some other things as well. And we went through a kind of painful breakup, was sort of dramatic and whatever. And, you know, this person was not well and sought a lot of revenge, I would say, for, you know, being hurt about the breakup and whatever else, and did things like, you know, tried to ruin my reputation amongst the community that I belong to and that sort of thing. But a bunch of weird kind of paranormal stuff started happening around me. And, you know, there were illnesses, there were things happening to electronic devices, there was like a really weird run of bad luck there, you know, just a bunch of stuff. And I thought, I bet this person is cursing me. And I got some indications that that was occurring. And I didn't. Here's a word of advice as well. Something you can do if you feel like you're being cursed, you feel like you're under attack actively, seek out a professional, and even better if you get a second opinion. So I got a reading and I got a second reading from people who I didn't know, but knew as very professionals, very highly respected people, very experienced, and who did different things than I did. Both of them independently confirmed that this was cursing going on. Both of them picked up on exactly who was doing it and exactly how. I remember because one of the things this person did to me was throw garbage around in my yard, in my driveway by my car. And I thought, well, that's just odd, immature behavior and terrible and, you know, whatever. And the first person I got a reading from said, they are cursing you. And one of the ways they're doing this is by throwing something into your yard. And I was like, oh. And I hadn't said anything about this person other than, I think it's possible I'm being cursed and I'm trying to figure out why and who it is. And, you know, definitely got information. And then the second person I spoke to a few days later or whatever, I said, you know, I think I may be cursed. And she's like, yeah, absolutely. Yes, this is going on. I don't even need to read cards or whatever. I can tell you this is going on. And this is, and described the person and described some things about the person. And, So I got my confirmation. So if you think you're being cursed or attacked or whatever, and you don't know how to do your own divination work or determine if you're being cursed somehow, then seek out professional help. Seek out somebody who does curse unraveling or hex twisting or whatever you want to call it. So that's a little bit about risk and vulnerability and threat and attack and damage and that sort of thing. So it's a way of thinking about stuff, right? I don't have to spend a lot of time learning to unravel curses. I'm not being cursed actively at this moment that I'm aware of, but I have protection in place just in case. It's sort of like you might live in a safe neighborhood, but it's still a good idea to lock your door. Locking your door. Okay, so another aspect of risk management is how much does it cost to protect from a risk, right? So let's say that I'm afraid of plane crashes, right? And so I don't want to fly anywhere. And I need to go, you know, I need to get 3,000 miles away. I need to get across the country. Well, if I drive that, it's going to take days and days and days and days and days to get there, right? And so that is a cost, not necessarily monetary cost, to overcome something that is low risk. Flying in a plane is a very low risk activity. Plane crashes are dramatic and they're all over the news every time they happen, and so they stand out. But if you think about things from a logical perspective, so I don't personally know anybody who is casting voodoo curses at me, so I don't need to protect from those necessarily. But if I spend a little bit of time every day sort of cleaning off my energy field and setting up shielding and stuff, if something were to happen, it's very low cost. It doesn't take a lot of time for me to put some effort into that. And it's sort of an all-encompassing act where it sets up quite a lot of protection. So locking your doors is a good idea. Why? It doesn't cost you anything to lock your door. It takes less than a second to push a lock on a door or twist a lock. And, you know, it provides you with a level of safety. Now, I have heard all kinds of junk advice about locking doors. People have told me, oh, if a burglar wants to get in, they will get in anyway. Sure. Absolutely. If somebody wants to break down your door, I don't care how much you've protected it, they will find a way in. However, I do know that the vast majority of burglaries in the United States happen through open doors and windows on the first floor of a building. They happen in the middle of the day. Why? Because people aren't usually home, and burglars are lazy. If they weren't lazy, they would go out and get a job instead of stealing stuff from you, right? Or they're trying to feed a drug habit or something. So locking your door is a good physical thing you can do that might prevent somebody from breaking into your house. I had somebody when my kids were little, they left the front door unlocked when we left, and we would usually go out through the side door, so I didn't realize that the door was unlocked. And 10 minutes after, and we live like off in the rural area, hardly any crime. 10 minutes after we drove away, our alarm went off. Somebody went through the door. You know, they must have seen us driving off, waited 10 minutes to see if we come back, and opened the door. So we have, you know, we obviously have an alarm system, and which was not very expensive and saved us money on our homeowner's insurance and, again, prevented somebody from getting into our house and stealing our stuff or causing damage or whatever they were there to do, or potentially hurting somebody, right, if we came home or something. So, again, there's what they call cost-benefits analysis. So cost can be the amount of time, the amount of effort, the amount of money that you put into something. So in thinking about spiritual protection, I'll teach you a really quick exercise that I do when I'm walking in public and I don't want to pick up everybody's bad vibes. You know, this is my sort of Walmart thing. If I have to walk through Walmart, I will say the phrase to myself, shields up, which is a little bit of a trigger phrase for me. It also comes from Star Trek, shields up. And then I will push a blue bubble of energy out and into place. It takes a second, very little effort, and I feel like it really, really protects me from bad emotional energy that is stuck in that space. Very low cost. Makes me feel better when I come out of Walmart, and maybe protecting me from things like getting sick or, you know, picking up what we call in shamanism intrusions, which is energy that doesn't belong in your energy system. And so this shielding is a really, you know, is a really good, really low risk practice. Now, what if I learned some complicated 45-minute long banishing ritual and I had to do it in my car before I went into Walmart and after I came out of Walmart? That doesn't sound like a very, that sounds like a very costly ritual. Sounds like something that's going, that would take too much time to be worth my while every time, and probably keep me from going to Walmart ever. If I had to do that every time, that might not be a bad thing. I don't love, you know, sorry if you like Walmart. I don't love going to Walmart. The energy there can be really harsh. So think about stuff from that perspective. Like, what can I do? So you might, you know, place protective measures we call wards. Warding is a thing in magic and in witchcraft and folk magic. You know, placing things like what's called a hamsa, which is an evil eye protection. Place those around your home. There are feng shui cures from Taoism that you could place to make the energy in your home harmonious. So there are things that you can do that you can place around that are low cost, low effort, that will provide you with a, you know, energetic and spiritual protection in your space. So the next thing I want to talk about is called defense in depth, or another way of thinking about this is layers of protection. So inside, you know, in your home, you have layers of protection from the elements, right? You have an outer wall, you have an inner wall, you have maybe double glazed windows, and then you might have a heating and cooling system. And, you know, you have all of these layers that protect you from the elements from the outside and keep you comfortable and keep you private and all of those things. So there's a lot of protection that happens there. And the idea of defense in depth or layers of protection comes, I don't know where it originates, but when I think about it, I think about medieval castles in Europe, right? So if you're, you know, wanted to rule over some territory and protect yourself from invading forces, one of the best things you could do back in those days was to build a castle. And the first thing you thought about when you were going to put up a castle is, where am I going to put this castle? Right? The environment itself is going to provide a layer of protection. If you have a castle and there's only one route into the castle, you build a castle on top of a hill, as they often were, overlooking things, and there's one road up, very easy layer of protection there. There's only one way enemies could approach. Okay, so the environment is the outer layer of protection for a castle. And then you would dig, you know, you might dig a moat and fill it with water. It would be difficult, you know, to make it difficult for people to cross. It's another layer of protection. And then, of course, castles have walls. And then inside those castles are, you know, soldiers probably with, you know, bows and arrows and other, you know, implements of defense and offense inside the castle. And at the usually at the center or, you know, some really protected area of the castle, there was something called a keep. And the keep is a place that was extra fortified and sort of the last bastion of defense. If the enemy got past your walls, you could retreat to the keep and hold them off even longer and hope that, you know, hope that they either, you know, ran out of supplies eventually or reinforcements arrived or whatever. Okay, so you had all of these layers of defense, defense in depth, right? So in your computer system, you know, you might have your network security, right? Your router provides a layer of security over the network. And then your computer operating system itself, you know, provides some security, and you hopefully have antivirus software that checks things and all of that. The last line of defense in any computer system is a human being. So you can definitely do things to mess up your computer. You can definitely let attackers in. You've probably heard of phishing attacks where people send things over email. You know, they send malicious stuff over email and try to get you to open it or to click on a link that's malicious or something like that. There's something called human engineering and hacking where they try to get you to give up your passwords or that sort of thing. And so with a castle defense, right? If if Bob was in charge of closing the drawbridge and he forgets, he was the last line of defense, right? Or you had the guys with the swords inside the castle fighting off the enemy if they breach the walls. So with spiritual defense, you have helping spirits. You have spirits that you might pray to, or if you are shamanistic, you might journey to or call upon. You might have images of saints if you're religious, or pray to whatever the, you know, god or god or goddess or gods and goddesses that you worship. You know, that's a high-level defense against things spiritually, right? But there's also the environment, right? And I talk about walking through Walmart. You know, if I keep my environment spiritually clean and uplifting, and I don't wander into dark forest, you know, into the middle of fairy rings and dark forests and, you know, do silly things, that's another sort of layer of defense. Okay. Then, you know, closer in, I might wear an amulet or a talisman or have wards around me. And then I might do rituals. I might learn banishings. I'll talk about what a banishing is in a moment. I might learn banishing rituals. I might do this energetic protection, that sort of thing. But I am my last line of defense. And again, if I, you know, run into problems, I might hire a professional to help me out. So this is what I sort of mean by defense in depth. And again, you're always sort of the last line of defense, the things that you do, the things you choose to do, your behaviors, how you take care of yourself, and your systems, your various systems, meaning your physical body, your energy body, your spiritual body, your soul body, all of these things, you got to take care of them, right? So again, I could have the most secure household in the world, but if I stop taking care of my hygiene, and I might get sick, right? Or if I eat a lot of bad food, I can weaken my body. And the other thing is, if my body is weak, you are also energetic. You can be energetically vulnerable. So spiritually, energetically, you can be vulnerable as well. These systems interpenetrate, interact, and communicate with each other and are dependent upon each other, particularly your energy and energy body and physical body. And they interface quite a bit. This is why things like acupuncture, Reiki, and energy healing work. So you have to take care of yourself. Now, there are a lot of spiritual systems out there, religions and other spiritual systems, that talk about purity, and they will have you do things like bathe before a ritual, taking care to clean the physical body, but also cleaning the energy body. And I'll give you a hint. Salt is a really powerful energetic thing. So salt scrubs in a shower or a bath are really great. Epsom salts work because the crystals absorb the energy and then it washes down the drain. So really, really good thing to do if you ever feel kind of gross, like you've picked up some bad energy. Keep some Epsom salts and some salt scrubs on hand. You can pick up that stuff at a grocery store, for crying out loud, and very inexpensively. Keep those on hand. They're good, really good cures. So let's talk a little bit about rituals as well. There are different types of rituals that you can do if you feel energetically impure, or even if you're under some sort of attack. When I was being cursed, I did a lot of ritual work, which involved doing protective work around my home, around myself, around my loved ones, working with my helping spirits. So I want to go a little bit into what types of spiritual things are quote unquote threats. I use that term not to make you feel scared or, you know, whatever, but just because it's the word I know from doing risk analysis and that kind of thing. And so let's talk a little bit about some of the different types of threats spiritually that are out there. So I talked about curses already. Curses are any sort of baneful magic, anything where somebody tries to take control over you or cause you harm physically, mentally, emotionally, cause you fear, cause you depression, what have you. Curses can cause a lot of what we call luck issues. So if somebody thinks they're cursed, I'll talk it out with them first before I do the work to determine if they're cursed. Because sometimes I can just say, well, it doesn't sound like a curse to me. You would have more stuff going on. So you would, maybe have a run of bad luck, which might include bad health, phantom pains, things that can be diagnosed, along with, weird occurrences, stuff showing up in your house. Sometimes there are entities involved, sometimes not. Okay, so cursing is, baneful magic. And I actually lump some like love spells and stuff into this, where if somebody were to cast a love spell on you to emotionally manipulate you to fall in love with them, that is, in my opinion, taking away your free will, not something I recommend. If you and somebody have feelings for each other and you do some magic maybe together to intensify your passion, or you do magic work that is not targeted at a specific person, but say you want to manifest more love, romantic love into your life, great. I think that's totally fine. But don't do stuff that takes away people's free will. That is bad juju. It's bad karma. It will cause you problems. And if somebody knows what they're doing, they can reverse spells. There's all kinds of counter magic, spell reversal and counter attacking and all of that sort of thing. Right. So that's what I sort of consider spells, cursing, baneful magic. Ton of stuff out there. It's been done since the dawn of time. They will find lots of like Greek and Roman like lead tablets with curses carved into them, naming specific people. They'll like carve a curse and then throw it into a well, You know, not to mention the fact that you're polluting a well with lead. Curse enough. So all kinds of curses. There are shamans who throw curses and magical attacks at each other. So, you know, maybe I'll do a whole episode on cursing at some point, but it's far too complicated for me to get into too much detail here because I want to get into some other types of things. Then there are what we consider like energy attacks, spiritual energy attacks. So people are attacking your aura, your chakras, your energy system to cause a disruption, usually in your health, but also can cause emotional dysregulation, all kinds of stuff. The evil eye is one notorious type of energy attack. What the evil eye is, there are some people who are born with the ability to do the evil eye and maybe even unaware of it. But it's a magical attack that is usually cast through the gaze, and there is intense negative emotion behind it, and it, like a laser beam, can burn a hole in your protective system. So imagine if I could, you know, point some sort of energy weapon at you and disrupt your immune system. You might not immediately get sick, but down the line you could get deathly ill, right? And that is a little bit what the evil eye is like. And the evil eye, you know, is known across many, many, many cultures by different names, you know, malocchio, and which means, you know, bad or evil eye in Italian, but there are different words for it in different cultures. You see it, you know, you see protective charms against evil eye in all kinds of cultures. So that's another type of threat. Another type of threat is things that we do to ourselves that because we don't really know what we're doing. So you could right now, at this moment, go on the internet and download instructions for evoking a demon in your living room. Or a djinn, or some, you know, opening a portal into a chaos dimension or whatever, with zero experience, zero training. Now, back in the days where these grimoires, which are, you know, grimoires are spell books or big books of magic, where they, when they were written by people who had been studying and practicing their entire life and probably apprenticed under other people, read tons of works. These books were incredibly rare, incredibly expensive. You couldn't just walk down to the mall, which didn't exist at the time, and go into the bookstore and say, "Hey, give me a book to summon demons." Right? You had to be very wealthy to own any books. It was, I remember reading something that at the time, John Dee, a very maybe famous guy, you may know him, you may not know him. He was the court astrologer, many things. He was a court astrologer for Queen Elizabeth I. He knew literally all the knowledge there was to know by mankind in Western Europe at that time. He had studied every subject. He had several thousand books in his collection, which was many times more than the libraries of Cambridge and Oxford combined. Think about that. Books were incredibly rare, incredibly expensive, and often not written in a language that you understood. Like, you would have to, today, you know, John Dee probably had five or six languages under his belt, at least, you know, English, Latin, and Greek, and then maybe several others, as people did with classical education, but you had to be very wealthy to have that. So not everybody could do this. You had to be educated. You had to go through training. You had to go through years of purification. Today, just download a ritual and summon a demon in your living room, you know, or, a, you know, some powerful spirit, or do djinn magic or whatever. If you joined a magical lodge, for example, a magical organization or magical lodge, you would pass through many degrees of practice, and that would include practical daily spiritual work. So I have encountered individuals, I may have talked about this in other podcasts as well, and I could see stuff buzzing about them. I could see beings that were, you know, they had picked up all kinds of hitchhikers from opening doors that they didn't know what to do with and didn't know how to close and didn't know how to protect themselves from the entity. So we can be our own, we can be our own attackers if we're not careful. I say this very frequently with people who use a tremendous amount of psychedelics as a shortcut to, instead of doing shamanic or other spiritual work. They just, you know, I remember somebody walking into a lecture I was giving, and I could see little beings buzzing around his head like little airplanes flying around, or, you know, in the cartoons when somebody gets bonked on the head and birds fly around them, it was like that. And this guy's eyes were like glazed over and unfocused. And I talked to him, and he was an incredibly nice guy. And I was talking about shamanism in this lecture, and he came up afterwards, and I spoke with him, and he's like, yeah, he goes, I've done everything under the sun. I've done ayahuasca, LSD, psilocybin, peyote. He had a list, you know, and I could tell. I'm like, well, you opened a lot of doors, right? He goes, yeah. He goes, and once you buy the ticket, you're on the ride. There's no control over it. So, you know, and I know of people who have been hospitalized from doing ayahuasca. I know of people who've died from doing ayahuasca, things like that. I don't know why people think you can just experiment with this stuff, this very powerful plant medicine, you know, taken frequently out of context. When you go, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with plant medicine. What I'm saying is when it's used recreationally, abused, taken out of cultural context, or used by people without the requisite training and experience, it's incredibly dangerous, physically, emotionally, spiritually. Be careful with that stuff, folks. Get with, I don't know how you know if somebody's legitimate or knows what they're doing. There have been people who've like flown down to Peru to get with a shaman that they found online or whatever, taken ayahuasca and been sexually assaulted or robbed or killed or whatever, you know? So not to be into like the scare tactics too much or whatever, but you can just be careful with that stuff. And be careful with magic. Build your way up. Build your knowledge. Build your experience. When you do magical training the way that it's supposed to be done, and you're practicing, say, you know, you join an organization like a Golden Dawn type organization or whatever, you're doing banishing rituals every day from day one. Every single day, a couple times a day, you're doing banishing rituals. So you light, what happens is you develop spiritually, you light up on the astral plane. And that can be attractive to spirits. And sometimes you don't want those spirits to be hanging around you, right? Like bothersome guests. You don't want people just walking into your house when you're taking a shower or, you know, whatever, walking around in your skivvies. Likewise, you don't want spirits to just like come and take up residence or decide they want to, you know, drain your energy or cause you to have thoughts and that aren't yours or emotions and do things. So they start with banishing and they start with rituals that build up the magical credence. And there's great two authors that I like, really like. One named Rufus Opus writes about ceremonial, particularly planetary magic. Another named Jason Miller, who writes about sorcery, lots of different topics. I think they're loosely associated. They at least belong to the same, or did belong to one same magical organization. And they, you know, I've known them to talk about each other as well. I like both of these guys a lot. And they have both talked about the Roman goddess Metis, and Metis being this, you know, beyond being a goddess, also being a mantle of magical authority that one can don. And that offers authority over spirits that you might be conjuring, but also protection and that sort of thing. And it takes some work. It takes initiation. It takes practice. It takes creating magical implements. There's a bunch of work that goes into this stuff. You know, there are a lot of books out there now who just like pick up and start doing spells and whatever. And some of them are not very risky, right? You can pick up a book on candle magic and start doing, you know, candle spells. But if you're starting to do evocations and invocations and calling in spirits and stuff, and you don't really know what you're doing, I think it can be risky. Nothing, absolutely nothing in this world, including doing nothing, is risk-free, right? I talked about risk. Risk is the danger of a threat or the likelihood, I will say, the likelihood of a threat coming to pass and causing damage and the potential sort of multiplied by the potential damage that can be done, right? So think about that from a risk perspective. If I don't know what I'm doing, if I go and operate a chainsaw and I don't know what I'm doing, that's a risky activity, right? My ignorance is part of that risk. You know, chainsaws are risky enough, obviously. People get hurt using chainsaws all the time, right? Chainsaws, if you don't know, chainsaws can kick back into your face if you don't use them correctly. Or you can cut through a log and swing it into your leg or, you know, whatever people do with chainsaws. But your ignorance adds to risk. You know, if you are brand new to esoteric practice, start with something safer. Shamanism, you know, the way that it's taught in core shamanism is, you know, is particularly safe in my experience. You know, you're working, there are ways to determine that you're working with helping spirits that you should be working with and that sort of thing that are beneficial, and you're working with compassionate spirits. I'm not proselytizing about shamanism. Shamanism has other things to it that make it challenging. It does stir things up in your shadow and force you to confront them. And if you're not ready for that, you are not ready for that. So those, you know, those are some of the various kinds of threats. There are other kinds of threats, things like thought forms, which are thoughts that are transmitted that sometimes land on us and get stuck, right? So an example of this is if I, you know, growing up and I wanted to learn to play the piano and my parents constantly told me, nobody in this family is musical, you can't learn to play the piano, they might sort of transfer that thought to me and I might never either take up the piano, or if I do, I might not be good at it, right? And that thought is transferred in part verbally, but in part energetically as well. And people don't talk about thought forms very much, but it is a thing. And the word meme, you know, has come to mean like funny pictures with text we share on the internet. But the word meme, actually, the original connotation of that was an idea virus, an idea that spreads like a virus, right? And you can probably think of some, you know, some of these ideas that get spread around. You know, things like, I don't know, an urban legend, I guess, might be a type of meme. Things that kind of take on a life of their own and spread like a virus from person to person to person. An interesting phenomenon I've seen happen over these very expensive drink containers. Like when my daughters were young, they had to have a hydro flask, right? And I was like, why would you want a $50 thermos? Like, that's ridiculous. Had to have it, saved their money, pulled, you know, got their birthday money together and all of that, and bought themselves these $50 thermoses. They don't even use anymore. Now it's on to Stanley. Stanley's like a 100-year-old company that made thermoses, and somebody's like, oh, we can make this thing go viral if we get the kids into these things. Now they're buying these $50 Stanley because it's no longer the Hydro Flask. Will it keep your drink colder? You know, will it keep your water colder for 10 minutes longer or something? I don't know. It's not what it's about. It's about the brand and what it represents and this idea and the trend, and everybody's got to have it, right? It's like a virus that spreads around. So we want to be careful of those things, those ideas that can spread, their thought forms. I'm not saying don't buy it. If you want a Stanley water bottle, that's fine. I'm not judging or anything. It's just an interesting phenomena to me that I don't necessarily understand it, but that's okay. I don't have to understand the appeal for it to be appealing to other people or valid. I'm not judging. I'm sure there's lots of things that are appealing to me that many other people don't understand as well. So with that, I will give you some things to think about. If you are going to be doing esoteric practice of any kind, particularly things that are like conjuring or ritual work or that sort of thing, it would behoove you to learn some banishing. I won't tell you what kind to learn. There are many types of banishing you can learn. But there are lots of traditions about banishing, which is creating space around you that is essentially pure. It's purifying, sanctifying space for doing ritual work and that sort of thing. Banishing also, if you do it right, has the effect of changing your aura, making your aura more effective as a shield. So learn that. Learn some shielding. And if you're really, really into it, if you really, really want to learn some basic protection and reversal magic. In fact, one of the authors I recommended, Jason Miller, has a book called Protection and Reversal Magic that I think is really good. But there's lots of stuff out there you can learn. With that, I will leave you for today. I hope this has been helpful. I will talk to you all very soon.
You have been listening to Speaking Spirit with your host, John Moore. For more info or to contact John, go to mainshaman.com. That's MAINESHAMAN.com.